Welcome back to the African Wisdom Summit. I'm here with Erisika Razak. She has brought an abundance of new lives into the world as a midwife. Erisika is Professor Emerita and a former chair of the Women's Spirituality Program at the California Institute of Integral Studies and served as co-chair of the Womanist Pan-African section for 5 years. She is a regular contributor to books and journals and has performed internationally, and her film credits include Fire Eyes and Who Lives, Who Dies on Healthcare for the Undeserved. Hello, Erisika. What a gift to be having a conversation with someone who has inspired me and continues to help me grow. Today, this topic is wisdom of the arts, and I'm so looking forward to this conversation on ritual arts and learning a lot. So I'm just wondering, Erisika, if we could start with a short ritual.
Greetings, kinfolk, and thank you so much, Valerie, for inviting me. So let's just go to the ritual part first. It'll bring us together. So kinfolk, if the breath is accessible to you, maybe put your hand over the heart or over the belly and just take a breath in. Feel the movement of the belly or the chest. Notice the part of your body that is closest to the earth. It may be your feet on the floor, your sits bones on the chair or cushion, or the long limb lying out on the couch or bed. Just feel the pull of gravity, earth, our first mother. Breathe in, breathe out. And just notice the warmth or coolness of the day. Let's recognize with gratitude the earth, our mother. Let's recognize the plant people who give us oxygen. Let's recognize the two-legged, the four-legged, the swimmers, the crawlers, the creepers, those who fly. We are here because of the web of life. We are here to celebrate the web of life of which we are only a part. We are here because of the work and the wisdom of all who have gone before us. Ashe. Thank you. Greetings.
Ashe. Ashe. Thank you so much for that. Yeah. Erisika, I wanted to talk to you about bringing life into this world. It's often said that the word gossip was the first person who spoke to the baby when it was birthed. And to me, that's both art and both connecting to the earth. And just would like you to speak about that first. Yeah.
I think that when we talk about ritual, which can be defined as some series of actions, words, done in a precise order or for purposeful reasons that are spiritual or solemn and socially important, there is no culture in the world that does not celebrate and ring the ceremony, the entry of life onto this planet through the body of the birth giver. And in many cultures, it is felt that birth is the first numinous act. It foreshadows and embodies and emulates all acts of creativity. It's holy work to sit beside a woman in labor. And I say woman because I'm speaking of my experience. And while women came in all degrees of difference in terms of sexual orientation, gender ID, at the time I worked, we did not have male-identified birth givers. I won't use the term woman. And I want to say that the function of birth is a function of endurance, is a function of service. It is the act by which all life comes into being. And in many cultures, because women gave birth, they were held in high esteem. Their act of service to the people exempted them from other forms of work. It is said, for example, that women did not have to participate in the sun dance among the Sioux because they offered sacrifice in the form of birthing. It is among the Yoruba, those pictures of women kneeling, holding up perhaps a stool, the posture of kneeling, of a woman kneeling, is the posture of a woman in active childbirth. And it is said to be a posture that is very pleasing to the deity. It is said to be the posture in which one kneels before birth to receive one's destiny, before one begins the descent into the fleshly body of the mother. And in many African cultures, the term mother does not denote a lesser role or a role only inside the house. It denotes the role of those who exemplify their fitness to take leadership in the outer world. Among the Yoruba, Iya, the term mother of the outside, denotes the woman who is chief of the marketplace, the woman who is the chief priestess. In some cultures, if you are not a mother or father, if you have not taken part in the engendering of life, and that is always a spiritual act, then you cannot take titles. You are not considered significant or important. Now, I have to acknowledge this places a great burden and stigma on those who are unable to conceive, but it also speaks to the value and importance of those who bring life into the world. And I want to say that just say a little bit, the holding of a midwife in English is tied to the term with woman. And to hold a woman's hand in labor, to stroke her back or shoulder, to hum, to have her breathe in, to echo what she says, I heard it, yes, it hurts, is to walk with her through the valley of the shadow of night. Birth is the act that foreshadows and echoes all spiritual initiation. The dark night of the soul is something that every birth giver encounters, whether they have a C-section, whether they deliver naturally. One gives in service to life, and the outcome is never in one's control. Thank you for that
beautiful wisdom teaching. Thank you so much. So, we're here to talk about ritual arts within the African culture, the diaspora, and back in the continent. What is ritual arts?
Well, there are many ways to define ritual. And I one of my dissertation students, Preston Vargas, did a dissertation on what he called oracular wisdom. And he said that what is called art in the West, in indigenous cultures, is a dialogue between the human and the other than human world. I like to think of ritual as a way that we dialogue both with our unconscious in the Western sense, and then with all that is, all that universe of what is seen and unseen, the spirits, the deities, one's higher purpose, one's higher self. And that is the language, that ritual is the unmediated language that we as humans have with life. And for me, the ritual arts are the first great human technology. When the volcano erupted and 50% of the people died, it is our ability to lament together, to come and share rituals of grieving for those we have lost. It is our ability to hum, to moan, to sway together. I like to think that on those awful, awful, horrific slave ships that our African ancestors chained together in their waste, in their illness, bleeding, passing feces, passing vomit, change in horrific condition. We survived because somebody moaned. And somebody answered that moan. Ah! Somebody cried out. And we were no longer alone. We were together. And we cried out to all our deity. We cried out in prayer. We cried out in hope. We cried out in anger. These were unconscious rituals. Chained together, we could not do what we did in our home conscience. But that human instinct to preserve psyche, to preserve mind, to preserve emotional health is held by the great human technology of art, music, dance, song. All of these are what keeps the human species alive.
Let's take a moment to pause, and maybe you might want to fill that pause with a gentle hum as you speak of the genocide of our people. I just really just take a pause.
Our people's moans are in our blood. Our people's moans are in our throat. Those lost at the bottom of the water, those forced to work in the field, let's hold our hands up. Let's breathe in and send back 7, 8, 9, 10 generations our love and gratitude.
As
for those
you,
who die, those who live.
As you say that, I think every time I look at the ocean, I'm looking at the mass grave of our peoples. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, how has African ritual art supported African people in a transition from Africa through the period of the Maiatha and beyond?
Oh, in so many ways. You know, one, unlike the Western traditions which we came into, the Puritan and Protestant traditions that really separated mind and body and spirit and soul, that said color was bad, that said the body was evil. We came as Africans from peoples who loved the body, who felt that the body was carved by deity. Him, her, itself, who felt that the body, that while among the Yoruba, the head is esteemed, the head is the seat of Ori, it is the seat of that essence that is closest to the spirit world, but all of the body is sacred. And even in Catholicism, procreation, sexuality, the body is considered evil. And our dark skins are considered evil. When we came from Africa, we came from cultures that esteemed the night, that danced under the full moon, that had celebration at the end of a hot, hot day. We came from people that saw spirit, souls, body, all as sacred. And so when we were tried to, when we were straitjacketed into a Christianity that tried to deny our bodily connection to spirit, we rejected it. We transformed it. We brought possession. Now, spirit possession, the ability of the body, the preparation in Africa and in many indigenous cultures to open the body, to receive the spirit, to open the body. To let spirit move and dance and speak through us. Now, this is not only an African tradition, but it is certainly very strong in African ritual art. We brought that into Christianity. We brought moaning into Christianity. We brought moans and hollers into our worship services. If you even listen to the rhythm and blues song that, you know, somebody said, we don't sing the blues because we are unhappy. We sing the blues to get through the unhappiness. We sing the blues to say, in spite of, we are here. And we, not just I, we are here. So the arts of embodiment, the spirituality of embodiment came from Africa here. One of my friends in, I think it's 1966 or 68, went to FESTA, which brought Africans in the diaspora to Africans on the continent. And I remember him saying, Arisaka, the priest of Shango, Yorubaland, handled fire with their hands, and the priest of Shango from America handled fire with their hands. Many things were lost. Traditions were changed. But the essence of what it is to see spirituality as an embodied force that uplifts us travels. Bernice Reagan talks about in the civil rights movement when people had called a meeting and they were, you know, it's a meeting about getting people ready to register to vote. And she said the sheriff and his boys would always come in. They'd be taking names. You knew, as had happened to Fannie Lou Hamer, your shack, your little ramshackle shack could be firebombed. You could be kicked off the place that was your only home. You could be beaten to death. So these men with power and guns and the law on their side would come in.
As you mentioned,
Hamer would be in the room. And what she said is inevitably, somebody started a song, and the congregation took it up. And by
exactly,
we owned the air in the room.
Yeah. So we have to give a call out to Bernice and Sweet Honey in the Rock, because one of the questions that I wanted to ask you is how does ritual art show up in historic and contemporary political struggles of African diaspora people for liberation? And we know Sweet Honey in the Rock, through their music, through their art, has been part of that liberation of our people.
All honor and praise to that. You know, for me, one of the ways it showed up was in the art that sprung up in the wake of the death of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. We took to the streets as people of, not only of African descent, but all over the world. But when Black people took to the streets, we made art celebrating the life. We didn't reproduce those murders, those horrific snuff porn films that we saw over and over. We painted images of life. And when I live in Oakland, and Oakland, downtown Oakland, was transformed, and there were altars. Healing collectors made sure that candles and food and prayer showed up. And those altars were refreshed over the week. They weren't just put out. They were there. We can talk about the way that when people die sometimes in gang violence, there are altars set up by the side of the street. Those things come up because of people who can't grieve, who are only attacked, do not have the tools of resilience that are needed. And art and ritual. And that we are a people that esteems the speaking voice. We come from a tradition of griot. And so those traditions are alive and well in the diaspora and in the motherland.
Sunny, as you talking about Oakland and just have this memory of being in Oakland and going into a bookstore and seeing Black Angel cards by Erflin Manuel. And I just thought it'd be quite nice to actually talk about those angel cards as part of ritual art. And So one of the favorite ones is the teacher. And I'm just wondering if we could talk about that image, the teacher.
Yeah, and maybe it could be brought up. So yeah, so I did a paper once and I looked at some of the contemporary efforts by 20th and 21st century artists to return us to ourselves. And I love Ursula Manuel's Black Angel card. And the teacher shows a woman in a tree, a woman who is a tree. And this notion that we are part of all that is, this very African belief in an ensouled universe. Africa is a continent, not a country. So the beliefs differ. But throughout Africa, there are some traditional beliefs in African traditional religions. And one is that all sentient life, and very connected to Buddhist beliefs in that way, are to be seen and honored. And so there's a, if you know anything about Egyptian art, there's an image of Hathor in the sycamore tree. Hathor as a sycamore tree. And she's inside the tree and the fruit of the sycamore hangs open. Ursuline's card, the teacher, is very, very likely. There is the face of the teacher, the humanoid face within the image of a tree, wild branches sprouting out of the head. And that image, the teacher, creates the people. Mother may be our first teacher. In many cultures, it's said that mother is the first teacher or the caretaker. And that could be male or female. But the first teacher, and then all our guiding teachers, all our spiritual teachers, and what the teacher has harvested from a life of experience is freely given to all. Now, in Africa, knowledge is often earned. Here in the West, we go to college, we pay money, we're supposed to learn things. In Africa, the traditional teachings were oral. And you had to demonstrate that you were worthy. You had to go to an initiation ritual in which you met your fear of death, in which you encountered fear and rejected it, lived through it, survived. So that knowledge is there. And in Africa, the teachings are embodied. We are, the West is one of the few cultures where book learning, abstract knowledge, trump experience.
Exactly. I mean, what I want to say here is that when we think of that oral tradition and think of us as griots, one of the things I know in the UK, performance poets who were then predominantly Black poets, it was protest poetry. Yeah, because it just wasn't recognized, because it had to be page poetry. That was the aesthetic that was recognized. Yeah.
And it's really terrible, because one of the great gifts of African ritual art, they present a holistic vision of the world. And so, of course, what is happening in the day is in the art. In many cultures that are pre-literate, knowledge is in the very everyday symbol. And so, for example, in Nigeria, when a certain new satellite dish came up, women's hairstyles echoed that satellite dish. When I was in Tanzania in the 1970s, when it was Saba Saba Day, when it was the Independence Day, the cloth that women wore showed figures from the independence movement. So all of these things, in conversations with Ogata Melig, talking about the Dogon people, the strips of cloth, the three or four, echoes the third or fourth ancestor. So African people traditionally lived in a culture where what was important, what was ritually important, what needed to remember was in all the everyday art around them. The carvings that women put on the calabashes, to among the Fulani who wander, their exchange, they inscribe wishes for fertility, for well-being, for children. They echo the stories of the ancestors. They are traded during the rainy season, which is the only time that large groups can come together. Art is a language. It is a living cultural language, and it speaks. One of the things I said once about dance is a language. It is how we speak spirit, or if we're lucky, how spirit speaks us.
Mm. I wanted to ask you about the mask, actually, the mask, because actually we think of carnival, yeah, and the playing Mars and the mask, and we know that carnival, definitely a carnival that comes from the UK and Brazil, was the celebration of us getting freedom, and actually copying the masters and mistresses, you know, when they used to be able to look in through, you know, it was Lent, wasn't it, during the Lent time, and the white people would be playing Mars with their masks, etc. But it's in a way reclaiming that, because the wooden mask for ceremonial dancers has been really important. And I was just wondering, what is the significance of masks? Because we see it traditionally, and we see it on a contemporary level as well in places like Carnival, Feast of Meat Carnival.
One of the things that finally the West is catching up with is that the masks that have been so ubiquitous in museums, the masks are only a part of what Africans are not called a masquerade. The mask is a representation of spirit, and you cannot understand the mask, but it is the mask, it is the costume, and it is the movement of the dancers in particular ceremonies at particular times. And that when we cut off, we take the mask that somebody wears over the face, it's sort of like taking a cross and amputating the bottom half of it. The whole thing comes together. And typically, in African ceremony, masks were used to invoke the spirit and the complementarity of society. So among the Yoruba, the Gelede, the mask, they are masks generally of the mothers who, you know, when Christianity met female figures in Nigeria, who had the power to bless, curse, or kill, who rode through the night invisibly, who punished evildoers, whose powers were granted by Supreme Being, them itself, because Supreme Being is not gendered. Well, there was only one word for that, and that was witches. Now, in the last 10 years or 20, there's been an understanding that we're talking about our mothers, our powerful mother. So Gelede celebrates our mothers. They are the moral authority of the community. They must be placated. They come out to bless and heal and curse. Now, while men, it's often, it used to be said, it's only a male ceremony. But in fact, the foodstuffs, the woven costumes are made by women. This is an example of the complementarity. And the chief priestess often walks in front of some of the male, the Gelede, the male, the figures, which are female figures. So when we see these masks, we are seeing what museums did is they took the sacredness and they took the ceremonial nature. But one of the things I want to point out, because I did bring an image of a mask, the Wandusu from the Mana people. One of the differences, the figure of mother and child is ubiquitous to many cultures. But in the Christian concept, it is, while the Madonna is shown, it is often the Christ child who is the center. The Christ child, hand raised up, dispensing blessing, halo. Yes, Mary sometimes has a halo, but the emphasis is on the Christ child, the light of the world. In many West African societies, it is the power of the mother to protect, to sustain. It is the power. There's a proverb, and I can't source it, the particular African culture, but mother is like God because she gives birth to the people. The power of the mother to create in life.
Let's look at this Wandusu image. I think for me, it's really important to see some of the carvings. For me, why it's so important is that a few years ago, the British Museum fessed up that they had so many stolen pieces of sculpture under lock and key. Nobody could see it because they couldn't believe that Africans could produce such carvings. Can you believe this? Yeah. And I just really wanted to, yeah, to talk about the importance of statues and sculptures in ritual art. So I know at the moment, Germany, there's a whole movement to bring many sculptures back to Africa from German museums.
I think that this is righteous. I think that this is a time that we need to look at. Where did these objects come from? And there's also a contradiction. A mask, a sculpture, a masquerade may be commissioned by a particular individual who goes to the carver. The carver hears what is wanted. The materials that are used, wood, clay, etc., are sacred objects. They are not dead matter that we just appropriate. They are something that we pray before. That the process of creation may involve dreaming. It may involve sacrificial offering. These masquerades, these images, they may be made for the young girls coming out of initiation ritual, being welcomed back into the village. They may be for the young men coming back. They may be in shrine houses. And one of the interesting things, again, these objects have, I want to say, they have power. They have ashe, they have mana. They belong to that time and those people. And African people are very pragmatic. Some things stay till they wear down in the shrine houses. Sometimes the power is in that object for that ceremony, and then it can be discarded to go back to the element of dust, earth, water. And that decay is not trivial. All matter is sacred. And getting back our object, our sacred object, is surely, surely deeply, deeply important.
Yeah. Let's take a breath there. Yeah. The Sankofa. Yes.
Go back and fetch it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And maybe this might be a time to talk a little bit about Asunji's image, because it's, again, it brings up the issue of the way that we use ritual to braid together a path between the ancestors, the world of today, and our descendants who are yet to come. So again, Asunji is a contemporary artist. Her work, unfortunately, is hard to find. But she created an image, Dunham's Life Song, in honor of Catherine Dunham. And in many indigenous societies, what the West sort of says is there's good and there's evil, and we don't just banish evil. We want to take it out of the universe. And in many indigenous societies, we understand that actions that support human life and actions that do not support human life are part of a whole. The reason that we make offerings, the reason that we recognize the sanctity of other than human beings, is because we understand their ability to affect human life. So in this image, a figure, and Asunji says that she was looking for goddess figures, and she reached to the matriarchal path of Africa, of Kemet, of ancient Kemet. And so her figures are idealized. They're often dark-skinned and full-figured. They are naked because there is nothing shameful about nakedness. When I went to Egypt, I was astounded. You can see images that are 20 and 30 feet tall of the goddess. And while we don't see them in the replications, the typical dress was bare to the nipple line. So you see these images of women, you see their nipples. Sometimes the garment is translucent. You see the pubis. And there is nothing unsacred about that image. It is an image of a holy being. And so Sunji's images follow that. The figures are often semi-nude. She has this figure. The moon guard, silver echoing our connection to the cosmos. The figure is embedded in the dark night sky, reclaiming the divinity of night for us as Black people. And the figure holds one hand a unicorn, the other hand a snake. What is good? What is evil? In African cosmology, both the snake and any other image, the vulture, are holy images. They relate to creation. They relate to spirit. And this image is an image in which Sunji is using ritual images to remind us of our ancient past, to remind us of those living ancestors, visionary artists, teachers who connect the past to the present, to the future. To me, that's one of the importances of ritual art.
Thank you. I mean, when you talk about the past, the present, the future, the ancient, one of the things that I'd love you to talk about is the connection of ritual arts to spiritual forces, to spirits.
Oh, let me just take a breath on that. I personally feel so connected to the spirits of my ancestors. When things get hard for me, I think about my enslaved ancestors, my midwife enslaved ancestors, who sometimes on some plantation, as the child came forth, certainly had to wonder, do I help this child, this newborn, breathe, or do I let it go, knowing what life on the plantation is going to be? You know, and the issue of some of our people jumped on up off the friendship, and some didn't. And I was puzzled by this for a long time, and I thought about, I had a little shame for a while. Was I the descendant of only those people who were too cowardly to jump off, didn't have the means? And then I realized, these people, if my ancestors had such faith in the potential for a better tomorrow, people who knew they would never see freedom in their lives held on, nurtured a child, not their child who'd been sold away, but nurtured other children because they believed that by and by it was going to get better in the future. All of what Du Bois called our sorrow song, all those songs, it's going to get better by and by, those songs, you know, Bernice Reagan talked about a song, I Got Shoes, You Got Shoes. You know, there were laws actually prohibiting Black people from wearing shoes. You know, all our ritual arts have helped us through the time of oppression, repression, suppression, and trauma. They are the roadmap for moving through trauma towards resilience. Music, dance, art, protest, utterance of prayer, utterance of sacred words, utterance of exhortation to move the people. In a book, I think it's Yalo Diallo, he talks about in Africa, when you are about to go out in that hot sun to work all day, you hire a drummer, and the drummer talks about what your ancestors did, how hard it was for them. You know, there is movement and dancing. We came to the Americas and we had these work songs. They helped us, whether we were on the chain gang, whether we were in the field. These are the things that helped us survive. And yes, I don't want to be idealized. Some of our people broke. How could they not? How could they not? But our culture put out a roadmap for our survival. And that roadmap is in the ritual arts. It's in our humming together. Sometimes all you can do is hum. All you can do in the face of this oppression is put a hand on a shoulder. Child, it's going to get better. You'll get through that. All those offerings, those are our ritual arts. And I want to say that, the you know, when I grew up listening to Malcolm X speak, and one of my deep sorrows, regrets, is that Barack Obama was not the kind of orator that Malcolm was. I mean, given the bully pulpit that Obama had, I wanted him to speak like Malcolm. And the way that Malcolm spoke comes from generations, all the way back to Africa, of people who prophesied, spoke in tongues, realms who told your history, who remembered and remembered and remembered. This has come all the way down. I am not a Christian, but there is a strong Black Christian tradition in anyone, whether, and it's male or female, and those in the middle, those between, that tradition raises our spirit, lifts us up, reminds us that what we are experiencing was experienced by our foreparents, sets us on the good path to move forward, regardless.
What you've brought to this conversation is the feminine, and I want to quote from you. I mean, there's so many reading what your literature, there's so many things where I could quote, but I want to read this quote, which where you write, since all humanity is said to descend from a first mother in Africa, these images of the sacred African feminine are important to everyone. As people in a deeply diverse and multicultural world, we all need to know that our foremothers were powerful spiritual women and that their cultures loved and embraced them.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And I want to say, I totally esteem the sacred masculine. The article, but I'm a midwife. I worked with women for so many of my formative years. And then in my college profession, I worked with women and those religions that esteem the feminine. So I speak from my own experience. And certainly having a son, a partner, although I am a bisexual woman, I esteem both, but my work has been to reclaim the sacred African feminine. And by feminine, the feminine can be shared by many bodies and many genders.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So many people will be listening to this conversation from all different cultures. And the question I have for you is how can people from different cultures integrate ritual arts into their lives, including our culture too? How can we begin to integrate ritual arts into our daily life?
You know, ritual can be what you do in a spiritual ceremony, and it can be the fact that you brush your teeth every day. Yes. What we do and what is repeated has power. So notice what you do. Notice also where you learn certain things. Do you cook a certain way? Is there an ancestor, mother, auntie, grandmother, who taught you to cook or encouraged your love of reading? Maybe think about that person from time to time. You know, Louisa Teach has written the book Jambalaya. It's just been reissued, and she talks a lot about how everybody is connected to their ancestors, and everybody makes ritual. Indigenous cultures are not just African. Everybody, no matter what your ethnicity, came from a culture in which you esteem the earth. You recognize the sentient life of all living beings, everyone without exception. We couldn't have survived without this.
Thank you for reminding us that as African peoples, we are indigenous peoples. I mean, I often refer to myself as a stateless indigenous person because of the Maiafa, because it's so hard to know where we came from. But we are indigenous, and we must remember this. Is there anything else that you would like to share that you haven't shared on the topic of ritual arts?
Going back, I want to say, every morning, every day, every other day, whatever works for you. Maybe take a drink, a glass of water, a breath, and experience gratitude for the life you have. Acknowledge what makes your life sweet. Acknowledge the shoulders you stand on. Acknowledge that there's bitter and there is sweet. Braided strands of light and darkness, and that we're here. I think gratitude is one of the most important things, no matter how difficult your life is. At some time, somebody loved you, even if it was your higher power or spirit. It might not be your family. It might not be any living being. Someone had loved you. The great divine feminine, the great divine masculine, the great divine all-gendered, non-gendered, he, she, two-spirit. You are here because you are love. Acknowledge that and give that love somewhere in the world. In my culture, we were told, make the world a better place because you were in it. Do that. That's the ritual.
Ashe, how can people find you? If people want to book you or read your stuff, how can they find you?
You can go to, I've got a little bit of a webpage on the CIIF, California Institute of Integral Studies faculty webpage. I teach at the East Bay Meditation Center. I can be reached there. Thank you for joining me. Thank you, Vimalasara, for inviting me deep down to all that has come before.
I know that part of your art is both dance and the voice, and I'm just wondering if we could just end this with some humming or moaning.
Let's put, if it's accessible to you, put a hand over your chest, over the place of the heart. Ta-ta. Love them. This is what the science says our hearts sound like. Love them. Love them. Love them. Love them. Take your hand to the forehead. Breathe in to the third eye. Ashe. Ashe. Ashe.
Deep bows.
Thank you.
Thank you.